Hey everyone, my name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I do interviews with entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. And you know, by now, my favorite interviews are interviews with people who listened to my past interviews, built up their companies, and now say, hey, Andrew, I'm ready. I want to come back and tell you what I've done with what I've learned from listening to you and other places. And so that's what we've got here today. I'm so excited to have him on here. Today's guest sent me an email. He said, Andrew, it is time. I am ready. Let's get this interview going because I built something and I can't wait to tell my story the way that other people told their stories to me. His name is Peter Fries. He is the founder of SEO, which makes the world's first aromatherapy diffuser for the shower. We're going to talk about what that means specifically, and we're going to talk about what he did to actually grow sales at this company. Had to do with this landing page that he created, and I'll let him tell the story. This interview is sponsored by two great companies. The first, if you look at my iTunes cover art right now or cover art for the podcast, you're going to see that it finally looks good. Design Crowd did it. I'll tell you why and how they could help you. And the second, if you like the search on my site, I should tell you why TopTal is the company that I turn to do it. But I'll tell you about all those later. First, Peter, good to have you here, man.
It's great to be here, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
You know, I actually made sure that you really were a fan, not just like blowing smoke, but you are. You actually even bought Mixergy Premium at one point.
Yep. I've listened to many, many episodes. I love it and love what you do and I'm a huge fan.
Thank you. How big have you built this business? You know, I'm going to talk about sales. What was your revenue?
Last year, we did just about $1 million in sales.
So. $1 million in sales?
Yep.
From that one thing?
Yep. Well, one thing plus all the refills that people buy. So there's a whole kind of follow-on sequence that people get. So we have the system, which sets up in your shower, hooks onto your shower, and creates aromatherapy in the shower. And then we have refills that you can buy that plug in. So it's the kind of continuity model that really drives the whole thing forward.
What percentage of your revenue comes from that arm that holds the what is that called? The aromatherapy?
We call them pods.
So, the aromatherapy pod, yeah, pods. So how much from that initial cost and how much from subscriptions?
It's about half and half.
Wowee, dude.
Yeah.
Wow. So, what were you doing before?
Well, it's when we first started off, we didn't have nearly that size of continuity. It took a lot of thinking about how to grow that side of the business. Certain things that we did in terms of retention marketing, email marketing, Facebook marketing to really grow the number of people that came back and repurchased. But another thing was just improving the product as well over time, because when we first started out, we had a lot of problems with the product. And when people went to buy it and they experienced it the first time, their first reaction was not necessarily, I want to buy more of this. So getting the product right was a big part of that. But then also building out all those touch points to sort of remind people that, hey, you're running out. It's time to get some more.
But you're a guy who used to work for Amazon, right?
I did.
What'd you do for Amazon?
I worked in marketing and product development on their digital side. So mm-hmm. I was doing kind of marketing for the video business. So if you've ever watched a video on Amazon Prime, that was something that I worked on. I worked on integrating that into connected devices. I worked on kind of a lot of the PR launches for that service, some of the rebranding stuff.
What'd you learn from doing that?
Oh, gosh. I learned a lot, but I think the primary thing that I learned was that I didn't want to be in a huge company, like, you know, all my life. I really felt that I felt a little bit like I didn't have control over what I was doing. Like mm-hmm. all the orders were coming down from high up and, you know, I was a good lieutenant and I was good at like executing on what was being given to me. But at the end of the day, I felt like my creativity was not being fully exercised. And that's really what I enjoy about being an entrepreneur is being able to take action on something that I find to be the best way to do something and that I want to test and that I want to do. And at Amazon,
what do you execute on that you're especially proud of? What's one thing?
At Amazon or?
Amazon.
The best thing that I did, I think, there was I built a program there called Tweet and Save. This is really kind of in the early days of Twitter.
Tweet and Save?
Tweet and Save, yeah. And they still have an element of this there. But basically what it was if you went on to the Amazon at Amazon VOD handle and tweeted, you know, on behalf of Amazon, we would give you a coupon code to go use for a video rental on the site. And we got the follower count like from 15,000 to like 120,000 over the course of like a week or two. And we actually measured out the lifetime value of those customers and found that the value of those customers well exceeded the, you know, initial coupon code that we gave them to do their first rental. So it was a great customer acquisition tactic because every time they were tweeting out, they were saying, hey, I just got a free coupon from Amazon, click here to get yours. So it had a viral nature built into it. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I picked that is because Amazon was very, at least in the early days, very apprehensive about social and social media, and they were very standoffish about it. And so I had to kind of win over a bunch of people to say, hey, we should do this, we should try this. Uh-huh. And I felt very validated by the fact that it worked. And
I get it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's phenomenal. It's also a good company to have come from. It gives you a ton of credibility. It's the kind of company that even here in San Francisco, I see everyone's a badass. But if you work for Amazon, it means you really worked yourself to death and you could do it. It's the Marines.
That is absolutely true. Amazon is, if you get through, you know, a couple of years in Amazon, you have a badge on your shirt for sure. Because there's actually a funny story. At Amazon, they had this thing called the old fart tool, which is funny. It's on their wiki. And you can plug in when you started at Amazon. And so when I left, I'd been there about 4 years, and I was in the 98th or 99th percentile of longevity. The vast majority of people that go to Amazon don't last more than a year.
Oh, wow. So, because yeah. What? Do you have a memory of something that was especially tough there?
I saw people cry, man, in meetings.
You did? In meetings? For what? What would make someone cry?
You know, so you sit down in meetings and you know, there's a point person that usually comes in with a memo of what they've been working on. They're presenting to the rest of the team, and the leadership can be super harsh. I mean, they can be really hard on whoever's presenting. Sometimes I think taking it to an extreme. And I saw it a couple times where someone came in, maybe not fully prepared and didn't have all the answers on hand and just got torn to shreds.
Did that ever happen to you?
I got torn to shreds, but I never broke down. You know, internally, probably I was pissed, but I never
is
really.
Is it useful? This is one of the things that I remember working for Dale Carnegie, the How to Win Friends and Influence people. And I remember saying, look, I read the Dale Carnegie book. I understand it. I buy into his philosophy, but I still hear that assholes do well in business because they're pushing you to an extreme and people want to be pushed.
I got a good story for you, though.
Hit me.
One of the guys that broke down in a meeting once, he left Amazon and moved here to Southern California. He's a good friend of mine, actually. And he then started, he created a startup, and within a year, he sold it for $25 million. And he felt quite validated. And the guy that had kind of, you know, pushed his boundaries in that meeting got an email from him saying, hey, I just sold my company for, you know, $25 million. How are you doing? So, you know, yeah, I mean, in a culture like that, sometimes the a-hole does rise the ranks a bit, but, you know, there's a limit to how far someone like that can go, I think, because they're not inspiring people around them, and they're, you know, so there's a ceiling on how far someone like that can go, I think.
I see, and it creates resentment that could even outlast the company. Someone could be doing well and still think about, hey, I got...
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. All right, so I see why you would leave. I'm wondering where the idea came from for SEO.
So the idea actually came while I was still at Amazon. My parents came up with this idea. I didn't come up with the idea. My mom is a huge fan of aromatherapy of the spa, but she's always been, you know, someone on the go, busy saleswoman. She had three kids, and she never had time really to kind of unwind and relax on her own. Not to mention that spas are expensive, and, you know, just so she had this problem herself, which was she was just always stressed and never had time to relax. And she was literally in the shower one day and said, gosh, wouldn't it be great if I could have the spa right here? And for her, the aromatherapy was synonymous with the spa, like having lavender, that scent of lavender or eucalyptus or peppermint or whatever it was, kind of in the steam of the shower, was to her, that was the idea of being at the spa. So she had this idea, and she tells my dad, and my dad is kind of the nerd engineer of the family. And he's also someone that, you know, if you're at a party or someone will come up to him with an idea, because he's, you know, he's a tinkerer, right? And he'll know pretty quickly whether something is viable or not. So my mom tells my dad this idea, and he thinks about it for a second. He's like, that's really interesting because there's nothing else like that on the market. And he had just actually retired from his corporate career. So he had a little bit of time to, you know, tinker around. He turns my sister's bathroom into a lab, and within a couple months, he had a prototype going. So that was kind of the genesis of the idea.
I see. And did working at Amazon tell you anything about whether it would work or not, whether you could sell it?
So a couple things. Like, I was working on digital at Amazon. So working with a digital product and a physical product, I quickly learned are very different beasts, because a digital product can be quickly tweaked and enhanced, and any problems can be repaired, you know, very quickly. Whereas with a physical product, you got to get it right the first time, or you're going to have to go back and retool, and it's expensive, and you can't iterate as quickly. But I think that the experience at Amazon taught me to understand data and the value of data, and to think about things from that perspective, and also from a customer acquisition standpoint, because I did a lot of customer acquisition marketing at Amazon. So I went into this thing knowing, like, okay, like, we got to, how much money is it going to cost to acquire a customer? And are we going to be able to, with the amount of cost to make the product and the amount of cost to advertise, are we going to be able to break even? And then thinking about also the lifetime value of that customer. So I had that framework already built into me because I worked at Amazon and I had been doing that there.
Okay.
So, but in terms of validating the product idea, what we did for that was we actually did a focus group. And we just found people off of, random people off of Craigslist and brought them together, paid them like $20 each, gave them a product, had them go and experience it, and then brought them back into a room and started asking them questions, basically about how they enjoyed it, what their experience was. We hired a moderator to do that. And that was really the first kind of validation of whether this product would work. We also did like a survey, random survey of like, you know, 500 or 600 people in the U.S. and started, you know, asked them some questions about their willingness to purchase a product like this. At that time, there wasn't even a product. It was just a drawing that we had. And we got enough interest there that we felt that we may be onto something.
You know, something, if you see me looking around, it's because I'm cyber stalking you as we're talking. Your dad is Nils Fries?
Correct.
I see. And the company that he was president of, was it Aromatech Systems?
Aromatech Inc. is the parent company, is the company that SEO is under. So Aromatech is the
I see. Yeah. I get the connection then. And Aromatech sells a lot of different diffusers, car diffusers, household diffusers, right?
Not our company.
Oh, so maybe
that could be a different one.
Okay. That explains why. When I did a Google search, I came up with two different results. The first result was Aromatech Repeat Diffuser for the shower, which is you, and then Aromatech Systems, which just sells everything. I see. So yeah. What was he doing before?
So my dad, his background is chemical engineering, and he worked at a couple different companies in his career. He worked at Union Carbide, he worked at W.R. Grace, and he actually has 5 patents to his name. I think in combination, they're in excess of $1 billion of royalty income. Not, of course, to our family, but to the companies he worked for.
And so that's where you could get a little bit of help from your dad. And that's
absolutely
that. Who manufactured it for you then, considering his background?
So my dad kind of came up with the initial prototype. And then we took that prototype to an industrial designer in Boston. They came up with the first kind of aesthetic look and feel of the product. And then we found through that company a factory in China that they had recommended, and they built the first kind of first round of product for us.
I see. All right, so you get this thing up and running. How do you do your first sales?
Well, our first sales literally were me going and pitching to investors and people buying it on the spot when I was pitching to investors. They were so
really? Why would investors care about this?
Well, actually, it was difficult because most investors didn't necessarily care about it from an investment standpoint, but they thought it was an interesting, unique product, and they wanted to try it.
Okay.
So that often was the experience that we had, not just with investors, but also we tried trade shows. So we tried going to trade shows like spa shows and gift shows. We tried to sell the product there. And often we had trouble like closing an account, but the people that worked for the spa wanted to buy it for themselves.
I see. Why? And what is it about aromatherapy? We always call it aromatherapy, but I wonder what's the therapy involved in it, right? If I go to physical therapy, they better make my leg work better. If I take aromatherapy, what's going to happen that's better in my life?
A lot. So there's.
I like that you weren't even smiling as I asked that question. You're like, dude, shut the fuck up. I'm going to educate you. I saw that in your face. Yes.
Well, because I educated myself over the course of this business, I didn't know anything about aromatherapy, and it's actually quite fascinating. And but you know, essential oils are basically derived from plants. So you have lavender, you have peppermint, eucalyptus. They all come from different plants, and each one has a different set of benefits that they have. So, for example, when you breathe in peppermint, sends a message from your nose into the limbic system of your brain, where your emotions and your feelings are stored, and it actually stimulates noradrenaline in the brain. And they've scientifically shown this. And noradrenaline is what is produced when you're in a fight or flight situation.
Okay.
So just breathing in peppermint will energize you because of this. It's your noradrenaline is being stimulated.
Okay.
Different essential oils do different things. If you breathe in lavender, you're gonna have the complete opposite effect. It's gonna be kind of sedative, calming, relaxing. People that are depressed, if they breathe, it's been clinically shown that if you breathe in lavender or if you apply lavender, that you can actually alleviate the symptoms of depression. And the term aromatherapy actually was coined by a Frenchman named René Gattefoss. And he was kind of like a chemist, like my dad in a way. And he was messing around with essential oils. And he actually had an experiment in his lab where he burned himself. And he wasn't anywhere near like a hospital or anything. So he just was like thinking outside the box, like, I'm going to try putting some lavender on the burn. And he actually pretty much completely healed the burn just by applying lavender to his skin. So they have these essential oils have incredible properties. In many cases they're healing. In many cases they can stimulate energy or relax you. And that's why a lot of people like them, because they're totally natural. They come from nature. It's not something artificial or synthetically produced. And if you look at other countries around the world, you look at Europe, parts of Asia, essential oils and aromatherapy are very respected from a medicinal standpoint. It's in the United States. There's the FDA doesn't really regulate it, doesn't really consider it a real drug of any kind. But if you go in France or England or Germany, it's very, very commonly used.
So if you know my audience, if they wanted to start their day with a particular scent, what would you recommend for them?
Right. So we have our Breathe blends. I'm going to recommend ours, which is the Breathe blend,
yeah,
which has peppermint, eucalyptus, cedarwood, and lemon. But I mean, really, eucalyptus and peppermint, those are energizers and those are stimulators.
So I put that in my shower.
Yep.
Right. And as the water comes down my shower, I end up getting this aromatherapy.
Right. So what happens is there's a little filter on the tip of the pod and that interacts with the water, and the water then diffuses those little microparticles of essential oil. So you think of that little filter like a felt tip pen of your marker, mm-hmm. of a marker, and it's just kind of continuously wet with a little amount of essential oil, and the water then just disperses those particles into the steam.
And then I wake up because of it. I get that benefit.
You
and
feel it
because I take long
sure.
showers. I could take that arm that it's all connected to and move it out of the shower when, like, I'm five
Anytime.
Minutes into it.
Anytime, yeah. That's the way it's designed. Is it's designed to be flexible, so you can kind of turn it on and off at any given moment.
Okay.
And that's nice too, because a lot of our customers are families, and maybe the wife loves aromatherapy and the husband doesn't. So you're not like. So there's some other products on the market that try to do what we're doing, and they have it built into actual shower head, and you're kind of baked in at that point. You can't really turn it on.
Everyone has to do it.
Yeah, everyone has to have it. And
so, did you get funding? I don't have that info here.
We did. So so what happened was I left Amazon, and I actually went to business school. And business school was I was kind of like a fish out of water in business school because I was very
this
I'm
is
very
Anderson
in, yeah
SoCal yeah.
Yeah. And we already had the idea for SEO at the time. And just as I started business school, we got patents granted. So all of a sudden we had kind of something where a focus group said that was good. We had intellectual property. And I'm in business school and I'm like, I'm going to give this thing a go because I've got all this kind of free time. Not that you're not doing anything else in business school, but I had more free time than I had when I was at Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And I also knew that... When I graduated from business school, I was going to have all this debt. And if I didn't somehow raise some money to make this into a real thing and get some sales and all this stuff, then, it was going to be maybe back to Amazon or something like that. So I entered into a bunch of business plan competitions and I won a fellowship, for $15,000 at UCLA. It's called the Larry Wolfen Entrepreneurial Spirit Award. And we used that money to actually do our first production and to get sales. And then from there, based on that, just a little amount of traction, I was able to take that proof of concept and kind of the patents and all that and do an angel round of about $300,000.
I see. Okay. I don't recognize any of your investors, the Wakaya Group, the Serapath Capital?
Serif Capital, yeah.
Serif, okay.
They're in Seattle. But yeah, it's not, it was mostly from individual angels. It wasn't institutional or anything like that.
Okay.
So we had mostly angel investors investing in us.
At a 1.8 valuation?
Mm-hmm. Wow, you're finding all this information.
I'm looking it up. I'm even now looking up Candace Freeze, the whole thing.
That's my mom, yeah.
Yeah. Is she a Corcoran or is that a different
She's a Corcoran. Yeah.
She's a Corcoran.
She still works at Corcoran, but she was the genesis of this whole thing. So she gets a lot of the credit because she came up with the idea. But my dad and I kind of manage the business on a day-to-day basis. And then, of course, we built a team as well that has helped us kind of grow this thing and scale it.
We might actually end up I thought this was going to be a 45-minute interview. We might actually end up having to get that room for a little bit longer. I know you're...
Well, I can switch rooms.
Okay, great. Let me keep going then. First, I've got to tell people about my sponsor, Design Crowd. As a listener, do you ever notice how crappy my designs were? You could be honest. You. Sorry, Peter.
Oh. Sorry.
Do you ever notice it as a listener? Do you notice how crappy my designs were? Like the iTunes cover art?
I don't want to be mean, but it wasn't the best.
Yeah, you know what? I just never had any skill in it, and I also never felt comfortable like asking for it, because I've heard designers say, this is the way the clients tell us what they're looking for, and look at these idiot clients. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to be that idiot client. I don't know how to tell. I just want it to look good. Make it stand out. Look at these guys. Copy something.
Yep.
So I never bothered with it. Then I went to Design Crowd, and they had this one input box where I could describe what I'm looking for. Very small, non-intimidating. I hit submit on that, and it turned out that wasn't the end of it. They kind of sucked me into a couple of other boxes that were also equally easy to fill out, but I think if I would have seen them all at once, I would have been scared and not done it. I filled it out. I hit submit, and then they said, here's what it costs. $100 off because I used the Mixergy discount, which I'm about to give the audience. I thought, you know what? Great. Let's do it. Pulled out a credit card. That's a no-brainer for me. I forget all about it. Come Monday, I go through my email with my assistant. I hate email. My assistant looks at my screen, literally looks at my screen as I go through email, because I need her to keep me on track and to like take things off my plate if I can't do them while I'm going through email. And I suddenly see Design Crowd. I thought, huh, they're sponsoring again. That's great. I realized, no, wait. I bought something from Design Crowd Friday night. Let's see what they gave me. And I thought it was going to be like another form asking for more data. No. It wasn't one design. It was like a dozen, maybe two dozen different designs from two dozen different designers around the world. It was beautiful. They took like, I wanted to take the color green. Frankly, I'll be honest with you.
Choose which one you wanted, which is the best one, right?
So here's the thing. You have to give them feedback, which intimidated the hell out of me. I did not want to give them feedback. How am I to tell them this sucks or here's what sucks? So I didn't do that. And then I thought, you know what I could do is I could rate it. I'll just hit the stars on each one so everyone will at least know what it is that I'm thinking.
Right.
And I thought, screw it. Who are these people? What are they going to do to me? I'm going to tell them this thing sucks. Forget Dale Carnegie for the moment. I'm going to tell them, look, I told you to make my logo small. You made it really big. I don't need this photo, right? I had a couple opinions. I put it in there and I did it. I thought it went a good way, because the next day I got feedback. I got more designs based on my feedback. I thought, this is great. I started posting it on Facebook, a conversation going. Anyway, I picked the one that I loved in the end, and I really liked the guy. He actually made some changes based on ideas that I'd seen other people create. Actually, one idea. Someone said, I know you want green. I think yellow looks better. I thought about it. I said, yellow might stand out better. Boom. I went to the guy who I liked who gave me green. I said, can you do the same thing in yellow? The next freaking day, he gave it to me in yellow.
It's fast.
So I paid for it. Boom. Submitted. It's all, if you're looking at my podcast and whatever app you're using, you're going to see a nicer design because of Design Crowd. It's not just Andrew. They'll do this for anyone. You come to them with your design need, website, brochure, logo, anything. They're super inexpensive, which don't let that scare you off. You go in, you tell them what you're looking for very simply, and then they get you a bunch of different designs from a bunch of different designers, people who think in ways you couldn't even come up with to describe what you're looking for, right? They come at it from lots of different experiences and backgrounds. And then you give some feedback. It's not very hard. And then you get another round and another round, another round, another round, another round. Boom. You're just so overwhelmed by good stuff. You actually feel inspired. And all these people care about your work to do that. I picked the one I liked and I only paid for that one. It's guaranteed. If you're listening to me and you haven't tried Design Crowd, find something that you don't like in your life that you think needs to be designed a little bit better. Maybe be a little upset like I should have been about your design of a website or design of cover art or whatever. Go to Design Crowd. I'm going to give you a special URL. They're going to give you $100 off any design, up to $100 off, because I think some of their designs are so cheap that if they give you $100 off, it's going to basically mean they're going to pay you money. It's really inexpensive. Go to designcrowd.com/Mixergy. Inexpensive, but oh, so beautiful and such a pleasure to go through their process. Designcrowd.com/Mixergy. And look at what they did also on that page. We're going to talk about landing pages. I love how they did this landing page. I love the little touches that they did that only Mixergy people will appreciate. Designcrowd.com/Mixergy.
I'm going to check that out.
It really is so good. It's so worth it. So worth it. All right. You get your money. Do you put the money in product creation or somewhere else?
So we put it in basically in tooling, and then doing our first kind of production run. One thing we didn't really have a great understanding of early on was all the kind of cash flow management, and we're much better at that now. So we took a lot of the money and we put it into manufacturing, and we actually didn't have great terms from the factory, so we had to do 50% upfront and 50% on completion, and then that would be shipped over to the United States. Then we had other parts of the supply chain that still weren't done. So a lot of the problems that we faced early on were it took so much investment upfront to manufacture product, and it took a long time before we were able to then turn that into sales. We've gotten better at that in terms of managing that entire cash flow cycle now. But yeah, at the initial stage, we took that money, we invested a good amount of it in just creating product, and then we put a bunch of it into building a website. And then, more than I would spend
Why?
Today.
What's so expensive about building a website?
I had a vision for how I wanted it to look and feel. And we put a lot into building a custom Shopify site where we probably could have just taken a theme that existed and just iterated upon that. So that was kind of a lesson learned, but there was that expense. And then, just in general, we had a lot of marketing expenses at the beginning because we were trying out a bunch of different channels for how to sell this thing. And that was one of the key challenges at the beginning, was figuring out how to bring awareness to this, because it was a really unique product. It is a really unique product, but there was no kind of path that had already been defined for how to sell it. What would be the best channel? Should we sell it in spas? Should we sell it in gift shops? Should we sell it in retail? Should we sell it online? And when you're small and you have very limited resources, it's very hard to do all those things at once successfully. And that was a big learning as well, was we had to kind of hone in on what the right channel to sell on. What would be the fastest way for us to become profitable and to scale?
As an online guy, you didn't just immediately say it's got to be online?
I didn't. I didn't, because I didn't realize the direct response potential right away. I thought that the best way to find people that would want to use the product would be putting it in spas or putting it in hotels, especially spas where people were familiar with aromatherapy already. I didn't realize at the time when we launched this, I didn't realize how easy it was to find those people online as well. And we learned that later. But
we gotta
the beginning,
get into that.
Yeah.
You know what, by the way? I think you undersold yourself in your email to me.
Really?
Yeah, which is why I didn't go through the usual channel of doing a pre-interview, and I pushed you to give me points about what grew your sales, which I think are so helpful. We're actually going to use it to guide this conversation. You did so much. I just didn't expect that this is how big you got. And I'm looking at the original emails. Here's what we did to get $200,000 in sales within 3 months. You did way more than that.
Yeah. Well, because I think one of the stories that I was trying to tell you was how we were able to solve, because I think a lot of companies go through this problem of running out of stock. And then, what do you do now? And for us, that was a particularly acute problem, because we have just 13 SKUs and we have one entry point product. So when we run out of that, we have nothing left to sell. So that was a huge challenge for us. And I think the other thing was figuring out the combination of marketing on Facebook and with landing pages was really the bread and butter. But yeah,
I'm pretty focused on that.
Yeah, I thought that was the big win that we had.
I think it is. You know what else I want to get into, which is you said that you ran out of product, but you eventually figured out how not to do that again, how to deal with inventory management. How do you deal with that? What do you do? It's really hard to predict what your sales are going to be and to keep enough inventory. You buy too much inventory and you end up spending too much of your capital there and you can't use that money for ads. So what's the solution there?
Yeah, so that's still a problem even today. We've gotten better at it. But at the beginning, you have very little, your sales curve is very volatile, right? And so there's very little data to do the stuff that you would maybe do it, if you're at an Amazon, right? Because they have so much sales history to be able to run all kinds of algorithms and figure out exactly how much you should buy of each thing. But when you're a startup, you kind of have to, it's somewhat guesswork. Where we started getting better at it was when we started getting predictable traffic, and we knew exactly, okay, if we spend this much on Facebook ads or whatever ad platform you're focused on. But if you spend this much and you know what your return on your ad spend is and you know your average order value, you can start to predict, okay, we're going to, if we spend that much, we're going to sell X amount. And then you forecast over, you know, maybe 3 or 4 month period how much you're going to sell. And you start figuring out, okay, like, we need to order X amount to keep us in stock for the next 4 months. And then halfway through that, we need to start the next order so that by the time that initial stock that we've been selling runs out, where the new supply comes
in. And you did all that yourself?
Yeah, I just modeled it out.
You had to figure it out on a spreadsheet.
There's a couple services that we're now looking at. There's one called Locad, LOKAD.com. And they do this thing called quantile forecasting. And they'll actually take your sales history, even if it's a pretty limited amount of history, and they'll start kind of figuring out how much you need to buy. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool. So we're looking at stuff like that kind of going forward. But yeah, you just have to kind of know your ad channels. If you can get a predictable revenue stream going, and know how much it costs to acquire a customer, then you can just kind of set a budget, and you'll kind of get a pretty good feel of how much you're going to sell over X period, X amount of time. And then just know your lead time to get in new inventory, and then just kind of build a model around that.
What it worked for you when you were starting out? Because that actually is a pretty good problem to have, that you've run out of inventory, and then we're going to talk about how you solved it and still maintain sales. What worked that suddenly you ran out of inventory?
Yeah, so we had a big breakthrough last year in terms of really some of the pieces that we were kind of playing around with finally came together. Because I told you at the beginning, we had this problem of demand generation, right? How do we get people aware of this product? Mm-hmm. And what originally happened was we got really good at PR, and PR started becoming our bread and butter in terms of getting traffic to the site. But it was also very unpredictable. But I kind of built some systems internally in terms of getting and generating PR, just kind of hacking together systems. And, you know, got us on the Huffington Post, People Magazine, New York Times, just all this stuff. And then the big breakthrough for us was Good Morning America. We got on Good Morning America, and we did, I think, $120,000 in sales in a single day.
Oh, wow.
So all of a sudden, we were like, okay, if people see this thing in action, they understand it, you know. Okay, yeah, so we started getting really good at PR. We started getting traffic into the site, especially with Good Morning America. And then the realization was, okay, we can't be on Good Morning America every day. We need something that's consistent, that drives traffic into our site. And that's when we really started like looking at Facebook and Facebook advertising. One of our advisors really had done some really effective marketing for a long period of time with Facebook, and really pushed us in that direction. And just the targeting capabilities, the fact that we could go and take that list of all those people that had bought from Good Morning America, load that into Facebook. Facebook would then find not only those people, but similar people. And then just a lot of the interest and demographic targeting that we could do, all of a sudden we had our little GMA audience built up ourselves, right? And so we started running ads, sending the people from Facebook into our website.
You know, let me spend time. I want to dig into every part of what you just said. The first thing you said was we did some PR and it worked. And then you expanded on to Good Morning America. Then you said we can't depend on this. We need to build our own stuff. What's the first bit of PR that worked for you?
We got featured, we were actually, well, it's kind of PR, kind of not, but we were on The Grommet. I don't know if you know The Grommet, but it's a website that I think they're still around, but they feature kind of unique, innovative products, and they do a video for you. So there was that. And then we were in, the LA Business Journal. So we got some like local press at first.
So how'd you get that? The LA Business Journal and Grommet. I'm on their site. I think it's thegrommet.com.
So the LA Business Journal one came really early on because that was when I was pitching for this business plan competition. Someone from the LA Business Journal was in the audience and came up to me afterwards and said, I'd love to do a story on this whole thing. Because it's a very unique story. It's not just the product is super innovative and unique, but the story behind it is also innovative and unique. So we had those two advantages when going to journalists. We could say, hey, this is a super unique, innovative product. And also the story behind it, how my mother came up with the idea, my dad, you know, is the inventor and I'm selling it. The package of that was very PR, considered very PR worthy. And so it wasn't difficult for us to sell it to, as a story for people, for editors to cover.
I see. All right. So I get the first one kind of came to you because you were presenting.
Right.
Tell me about the process you developed that allowed you to get the others.
Yeah. And this is key. So what I learned was that agencies basically use this thing called Cision, C-I-S-I-O-N. And it's just the dark and dirty secret of PR agencies. And what it is it's like, you know, editors and journalists all have their contact information on there. So you can go find, you know, pretty much any editor, New York Times or Washington Post or Good Morning America, you can find their information and you can actually build lists. So what we started doing was building lists, like, you know, and different types of lists. So we would have like a health and, you know, health and wellness list. We'd have a beauty list. We'd have a home goods list. We'd have a, you know, holiday gift guide list. And we would start creating pitches that were targeted towards these different lists. And that was one of the keys, was like, don't just send everybody the same pitch. Send a pitch that's relevant to what the editor is interested in. And then we also personalize the pitches by using their first name, the outlet. And we use a tool called Streak CRM for that. We just load these lists into Streak and basically, you know, send them out.
Streak CRM. My kid and his kid play together sometimes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's CRM built into Gmail, isn't it?
Yep.
Right? That but was... what else is it beyond the fact that it's built into Gmail? What is it about Streak that you like?
The pipeline element of it. So we'd load the contacts in, and then we'd send them all out. And of course, with Streak, you can also personalize it, right, with the different variables. So we could put their, you know, customize the first name and custom, and you could do the mass mail merge. So you could send a bunch of these out at one time that were fully personalized to the editor, and then you would start getting responses, and you could say, okay, we sent out 1,000 pitches. You know, 150 people replied, and you can move them into another category. Okay, then they've replied. Now what do we need to do? We need to follow up with them. So we built this whole sequence of, you know, how to get the editor from A to Z to cover our story.
What's your process? What are the steps?
So we've iterated on this with PR Bolt, but what it was back then was basically, you know, load in the editor list, send out the campaign. If someone replies, first thing is, in the pitch, one of the key things that we did was always dangle something, right? So like, would you like to try a sample, or would you like to get a copy of our press kit or our press release? Because that creates a dialogue. So you want
something that they need to ask for that you're offering.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay.
Because that starts the dialogue. Because you might pitch to an editor, they might be interested, and they might just be like, oh, okay, I'm interested, but they never will express that interest. You want them to express the interest, so that then you can then follow up with them, because the rest of the game is the follow-up sequence.
Isn't it enough to just say, do you want to hear more about this? No. Why not?
You could do that, but that, like, I think that if you have something else extra, like a little bit more valuable, like a sample or a press kit that we've developed specifically for you, it's more tangible. It's something that they will...
I feel like a physical thing is really powerful from
better.
What I've heard. That, yeah. I'm going to give you something for free that you can hold in your hands, as opposed to free access to my app.
Exactly.
That was a big one. Okay, so it's...
So we would actually offer the free sample.
Uh-huh.
But what happened was, a lot of people would ask for samples, and then we found out that they weren't necessarily sample worthy. So we got into this whole game of like, okay, so who should we send samples to? Because it gets expensive sending out samples to everybody. So we developed a rubric in terms of like, what their Alexa score was, and what their authority rank
was.
So
that kind of comes back to this thing that you were telling me about before we started, with the Zapier, Streak, Cision, Haro. Talk about how Zapier helped with that.
I love Zapier.
Me
too. It's like my favorite thing. Zapier helps in so many ways. Most of our workflows, we have different apps triggering different apps. So, for example, if an editor replies, you can build a Zap off of that, or you can build a Zap off of, they ask for a sample, so then let me put them into our sample pipeline in Streak, and then as soon as it goes in the sample pipeline, that triggers a task in Asana for someone to go and send the sample to the editor, right? So you can build a whole workflow off of connecting apps with Zapier.
Yeah, I freaking love Zapier so much.
And that's what we're using that for PR Vault. I mean, that's just, it's built power.
You mentioned the phrase PR Vault a couple of times, but we didn't explain what it is. What is it?
So PR Vault is taking some of those systems that I developed for SEO and applying them, creating a service essentially out of what those systems were, and applying that to other startups, other small businesses who have the same problem, which is PR is super expensive, but it's an important part of a marketer's arsenal. And just because you're a small business or a startup doesn't mean you shouldn't be doing PR. So we're trying to make it easier for startups to be able to pitch their story to the press.
What does it cost?
It costs anywhere between $300 and $750 a month.
So I pay you $750, you get me press?
Yep.
Not Good Morning America level press,
could,
right?
It could be. We don't know. That's the thing. We don't know what... A lot of it depends on the product itself, how good your product is, how good your story is. So we've seen variance in terms of like we're just in beta now, but we have about 15 clients.
You think I should use you guys?
Why not?
What kind of press would you get me?
What kind of press do you want?
I'm looking for more attention. I guess there's a lot that I want, but I guess podcast attention would be interesting now.
Yeah, so we could do that. I mean, we just have to build a list of podcast, people like yourself, like that. We build that list for you, and then we build out your pitch, and then we'd have to kind of come up with what that pitch would be.
But do I need to go and do podcasts? I mean, I would like press for my podcast.
Oh, I see. What kind of press do you want? Do you want to be in like in a magazine?
Wherever entrepreneurs are, startup entrepreneurs.
Yeah, so we could do that. Yeah, for sure.
750. You guys work on it. You don't need much attention from me. You do it.
We basically do it. And the only attention we need from you is with our clients, we basically have like a 20 to 30 minute, consultation essentially, where we talk to you, we learn about what your brand or service or product is, how you want to frame your pitch. And then our people will go build your media lists, they'll build your pitches. We'll come back to you one more time and say, here's what we're going to pitch, here's what we're going to send, just so we don't send something that you absolutely hate. You have the ability to say, I don't like that, I like that. And then we queue it up, and we're not using Streak anymore.
You're using your own system?
We're using our own system, yeah.
I see. So. But will you help me figure out what the message is?
Yeah, so we craft that for you.
Oh, sweet. All right.
Yeah, what we don't do right now is once an editor replies and indicates an interest, we forward that along to you and your team to handle. That's something we're building out in the future, is kind of more like a white glove service. Mm-hmm. But right now it's more like a lead gen for press.
This reporter wants to write about you, Andrew. Go
exactly.
You handle it now.
Yep.
Got it. I see. Like, all right. You know what? Let me come back and talk about that in a moment. But first, I've got to tell people about this thing that I never talk about when it comes to TopTal. You know how you mentioned, by the way, that when you want to figure out now how much of your product to make 6 months from now, you've got a whole spreadsheet that you created yourself.
Yep.
I feel like part of the reason you could create it is because you're an MBA. Am I reading too much into it?
That's definitely an MBA skill.
Right. You walk into UCLA Anderson, you learn that kind of stuff. One of the things that TopTal did recently was they acquired a company that just had MBAs in their network that companies could then turn to and say, I need an MBA to go put this thing together for me. Like that is exactly the kind of project that they do. So anyone who's – isn't that incredible?
Yeah. What is it?
it's TopTal. They acquired a company that does it. TopTal now. They want to go beyond
– devs.
Sorry?
I thought it was mostly engineers.
They were. It started out as just developers, nothing but the best developers. They obsessed on that for a long time. Then they said, you know what? We can take our same model and work with designers. So now people who need developers also need designers. They go to one place. They get these great designers. We've hired both. Then they said, you know what? There's this company that's doing TopTal for MBAs. Let's just go buy them.
Wow.
And so now they have this network of MBAs, and some people like you need it for that. There's a company who I interviewed. Oh, why can't I remember the guy's name? He runs a company, it'll come to me later, but he said, you know what, I'm doing millions in sales, I've got a real business here, I have to raise more money to go to the next round, and I have to sit down and do these freaking spreadsheets for the investors, because now when you go to this next round, you need a lot more data. It's not just a PowerPoint anymore. He said, I have no patience for this. That's partly why it took so long for me to get into it. And so he finally sat down and he did it. I wish that TopTal existed at the time so I could say, look, you go to TopTal, a lot of people who are looking to raise the next round of funding who need a bunch of MBAs, go to TopTal and get it. Yeah. A lot of major companies, big companies who have MBAs, of course, in their businesses say, you know what? We as a company have MBAs. I need to hire someone internally for like a 2-week project. I don't have it. Yep. I'll go to TopTal and I'll hire that person.
Even if you're a startup, it's useful. Even if you're an MBA, like you have an MBA like I do, like I don't want to always do all that work. You know,
right.
Like I need to outsource certain things. So
yeah, you get an MBA great. Who's just obsessed with that stuff. You pass the work on to them. And the nice thing about TopTal is they understand your problem and they hook you up with the right person, kind of like a matchmaker for a relationship. And they're also there like that they're sitting in the middle, that if the person's not doing the right job, you have someone you could go and complain to. And if the person is not doing the right job, there's somebody there who can help find somebody else and will feel a sense of guilt for having introduced you to the wrong person. So for anyone out there who's looking to hire an MBA or a designer or a developer, you got to go check out TopTal, but don't use their standard URL because they're giving us something. They are also longtime Mixergy fans. They're giving us 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when we pay for our first 80 hours, and that's in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. You get to a no-risk trial period for 2 weeks. Here's the URL. Go to toptal.com/Mixergy. Top is on top of the mountain. Tal is in talent. mixergy.com/mixergy. How'd you get Good Morning America?
So Good Morning America was a combination of the PR hacks that I was telling you about before, like the Streak CRM and the list building. It's a combination of that and just luck.
What's a luck element?
So we were at a trade show in Atlanta, and this was at a point where we still hadn't figured out kind of how to position this company, how to position this product, and what the path was. So we were at this trade show because we thought, okay, maybe gift shows or, you know, gift stores will be a great place to sell the product. And we're there, and we're kind of a little down on our luck just because, you know, we hadn't sold that much, and it's expensive to go to a trade show for the booth and everything. So just sitting there in the booth, and who else walks by but Tori Johnson from Deals and Steals. And I pay attention to the name cards of people that are walking by. So I'm like, oh, I better get into gear here. And I bring her into the booth, and she looks at the display, and she's like, I've seen this before. And I'm like, oh, really? That's amazing. How have you seen it? Because I kind of had forgotten that I had pitched, that she was part of my pitches. And she was like, your PR agency pitched this to me. So I guess like I'm good enough that she considered it to be the agency. So then I kind of remembered, I was like, okay, I see. So she saw it because she was part of our pitches. And so with the combination of, I think, being at the show, but the fact that she'd seen it before helped a lot, because it wasn't the first time she'd seen it. It had some level of credibility for her. And so just a few days, so we had a kind of nice chat there. And then a few days later, her and her assistant came back again and said, can you be ready by next Thursday to go on to do Deals as Deals, Good Morning America? And I was like, shitting my pants, but I'm like, yes.
Wow, I can't believe it. I'd never heard of her before. I don't have a TV, but now that I've looked her up, I can see she's a real big deal. She does this show within a show, within Good Morning America.
Yep. I mean, if you can get on that, and they don't charge you anything to be on there. I mean, it's just like, it's free promotion, and so many eyeballs, and it's just a great kind of awareness generator.
B2B didn't go so well for you. You told me before the interview, you said, look, we did about $50,000 in sales from all these trade shows, right?
Yeah, B2B, I still think at some point in the future can be a viable path for us. But the learning was where we were, the stage of our company, that wasn't the right path, the right channel to attack, because it's expensive and you need a sales force. And it's, especially the market we were tackling, which was the spa market, is super, super fragmented. So it's very difficult to scale in that channel at a low cost of entry, whereas online marketing or even PR, but these other elements, you can, with very little cost, can scale things up pretty quickly, and you can do a lot of testing and a lot of iterating. So it wasn't the right channel for us at the time. At some point in the future, it might be.
All right, so I was a jerk before. You wanted to really keep going with your story, and I said, hang on a second, let's get into the details of each step. I'm glad I interrupted because I wanted the details. Now let's get back to something else you said, which is we realized we couldn't keep getting another Good Morning America every week. If we wanted to grow, we needed to find another way. And you were starting to say what you did with lookalike audiences on Facebook. Right. What worked for you? What did you do at first, and then what works?
What we did at first was the thing that we did right at first was loading in our customers as a custom audience, and then creating lookalike audiences off of that. And doing some interest targeting and some demographic targeting that really honed in on who we felt our customer was. That was all the right thing to do. And then we used image ads. So we'd have an image of the pods or an image of the product, and then we would drive people into the website. And with that, we were kind of like breaking even, maybe a little better than breaking even, but it wasn't like a huge stream of customers coming in, right, that we really wanted. We weren't getting a huge return on our spend. So what we changed was we basically started trying to do video advertising. And we started with this video that we have on our website, which is like a 2-minute and 30-second video, and we loaded that into Facebook. The problem was it has a talking head in it, and it takes about a minute and a half to actually get to the product. And Facebook, at least at the time, the ads were on autoplay silent by default. So it took a little while to realize people were probably not like understanding what the woman's talking about and waiting a minute and 20 seconds to the product. So then we cut it down to about 60 seconds, got rid of the talking head, put some subtitles in there, and started doing better. And by the time we got it down to about 20, 25 seconds, we realized we could cut it down to about 20 to 25 seconds and still tell the same story, essentially. That really started to make a difference. Then when we paired that with, instead of sending, what we learned is instead of sending the traffic into our website, what about sending it into a dedicated landing page, which was all about this product and this, you know, one-time sale that people could take advantage of. And that was the real game changer, was the combination of video advertising and a landing page. And the reason video works so well, especially for us, is our product requires a little bit of explanation. So with a video, like a 20-second video, people understand what it is. So the traffic that's coming into our site all of a sudden is super qualified. They know what it is. They know what they're getting in for. Whereas with an image before, some people may have been like, that's interesting. I wonder what that is. Click. And then they'd get in and be like, I'm not interested in this.
Got it. They click. They see it.
Yes.
Their curiosity is satisfied, but that's it. By the way, yes. You were looking over your shoulder. Do you have more time in this conference
room? So far, there's nobody here. So,
okay. If someone wants to come in, just let me know.
I will. We're good.
All right. Awesome. So then let's talk about Unbounce, because that's what you use for a landing page. You spent all this money to create a Shopify site, which actually is not the site that you have right now. I've looked at it from 2012. It was
different. We rebranded the site too, and that was another kind of like exercise. Not an exercise in futility, because the branding I do feel is important. Like, we got the branding right. But we thought that redesigning the site and then sending the traffic into a redesigned site would improve things tremendously, and it didn't. The learning was, with paid traffic, you have kind of one shot at this person that you're sending into your site. And so don't send them into your website, because if you send them into your website, they're in a playground, essentially. And there's all kinds of bells and whistles.
Yeah, I see it. The original site was like, what is SEO? Starter kit, pod blends. I want to see what the pod blends are.
Right.
About us. Who the hell created this? And I'm going through the whole thing and not doing what you want me to do, which is go get this thing.
Exactly. And so with a dedicated landing page, we got rid of all, stripped out all the links. We improved the headline, the H1, to make it very, very like clear what the benefit is. So we use this expression, make every day a spa day. And then we use testimonials throughout. It's kind of like a long, almost like a sales letter format. Because we actually tested a shorter version of the page, and that didn't do nearly as well as the longer version, which kind of draws out the benefits, what essential oils are, why they're important, how you can set this thing up in your shower, how easy it is. And then really kind of with the testimonials is where we drive some of the social proof that's really important and some of the anchor pricing. Because a lot of the feedback that we got from the traffic that we were sending into our website initially was that the product felt too expensive. And we didn't necessarily want to really lower the price, but we wanted to create a way that wouldn't feel expensive. So you'll notice on that landing page, the first thing people see is someone saying, I love the spa, but I can't afford, you know, $150 treatment at the spa. It's too expensive, right? That's on the Unbounce page.
What's the URL for that?
Promos.seo.
Right. I was on the homepage now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a whole URL, actually. It's not just promos. Okay.
Yeah. Do you want me to send it to you? Do you have it?
No, I've got it here, actually. Okay. I just had another tab. As a busy mom and family breadwinner, I rarely have time to relax and unwind, let alone go spend $150 at a spa. With SEO, I turn on the shower and feel the stress just melt away. Jill, and I love how you have her last name there, Podgorny, SEO customer.
Yeah. So what that does, and by the way, these are mostly real testimonials, some language tweaking to emphasize what we want to say, but these are all based off of real things.
Is that really a photo of Jill?
That's not a photo of Jill. But it's a real customer that said that kind of more or less that statement. We added in the $150 spa thing to add emphasis.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, like, one of the first things you see on that page is, I also love going to the spa, but I hate the $150 price tag. So that's something that is in someone's head. They scroll down the page, they finally get to our offer section, and they see, okay, the everyday like price for this thing is $79, which we also kind of just invented because there's no everyday price for this thing. We came up with this thing so we can decide what the price is. And some spas do sell it for, you know, we still have some spa customers. So some of them do sell it $60-$70. So it's not really totally misleading. And then we say, but your price today is $39.97. And so all of a sudden you've gone from kind of $150 psychological standpoint down to $39.97. And that had a big difference. All of a sudden the resistance to the pricing kind of didn't completely go away, but a lot of it was taken away.
And this whole thing says pre-order now.
That's the new page. So that's what we do when we're waiting.
So you've run out of inventory again.
Yes.
I see. Wow. So as much as no wonder you were paying attention to the TopTal ad. Maybe you can get an.
Well, I'll tell you why we ran out of inventory this time. Mm-hmm. This time because we're switching factories. So we're moving to a new factory. So we don't have a supplier at this point because we've redesigned and re-engineered the product, and we're waiting on the new factory to come out with a new version of the product. So
okay, and then you lead people directly to the Shopify checkout page. Yep. No branding really on this, except like your name typed out at the top.
Yep.
I don't see the upsell for a subscription on this. Where do you do that?
So we're adding that in. We've tested that. There's an app called Carthook, CARTHOOK.com. Uh-huh. And we're working with those guys to basically build a whole upsell funnel, upsell sequence. So the reason we go straight from the landing page into checkout is I don't want any resistance points. I don't want any friction at all. I want someone to buy that kit and I don't want to put any blockers in front of them. So we originally actually tried sending them from that page into the cart page, which would then go into the checkout, and there's a tremendous drop off. So we're like, okay, forget it. Let's just, they want to buy this thing. Let's let them buy it. And we'll take care of all the rest of the business in the upsell sequence. So the upsell sequence is what we're working on now, which is basically if you buy the starter kit, the next thing you're going to see after you check out is, hey, by the way, we also have a variety pack, which comes with all the scents that don't come in your starter kit. Would you like that too? And we'll give you 50% off if you subscribe today.
Got it. Okay. And then they don't have to enter their credit card information. That's what Carthook does. I know Carthook. It's created by Jordan Gall, a Mixergy fan.
Yep.
I interviewed him. I think it was about Carthook.
So Carthook has become that. Carthook used to be a cart abandonment thing.
Right.
And they've now added, they're adding this other thing, which is the upsell funnel.
E-commerce checkout funnels too.
Yep.
So they build a custom? I thought it was a product.
No, it is a product. We're using that. But what they're working on right now, and he tells me it's almost complete, is an integration with Recharge apps. So Recharge is one of the most popular subscription apps on Shopify, because Shopify doesn't natively support subscriptions.
Okay.
Who the hell knows why? But so Recharge does that. So Jordan is integrating his upsell checkout thing with Recharge, and that's what we're working on and we're waiting for.
I see.
But that's going to be the big – that's our next – evolution is, okay, like we've gotten really good at acquiring customers. Now let's hyperactively get them onto subscription.
What do you do today then to get 50% of your revenue from a continuity product?
So we do a lot of retention marketing. We do a lot of email marketing. So when people buy a starter kit, like immediately after the starter kit, well, not immediately after, but I think it's like 30 days after they get it, they get an email saying, hey, like here's a 50% off coupon to get onto a subscription. Also in the box, There's a coupon for a subscription, and that's the most effective.
The box.
Well, that, but just that initial 50% off to get onto the subscription. That's the most effective way. And then
once you have the thing in your house, you feel like a fool for having bought it, unless you keep using it, and you might as well, you know what?
And then you're looking at it every day when you're in the shower,
right?
So it's just there every day, and you're like, oh yeah, I'm running out. Like it's time to get some new ones. So
by the way, I get scented shampoo. I'm kind of an oaf or a philistine. Here's what I do. I love, do you know every body shampoo?
Yeah.
I freaking love it. I used to use a bar of soap on my body and my head because I don't care that much, right? And I don't have that much hair. I buzz often. Right. And then I had people stay over. Once we got a place in San Francisco, people would stay over a shit ton. I'm cursing a lot in this interview. I thought, you know what? A bar of soap when people stay over is always getting ruined. So I started using a pump. I found this everyday pump. You get this massive amount of soap. It smells like something different every time because Amazon keeps shifting it on me or whatever's available. Whatever's available at a low price shifts. But I like that their philosophy is use it everywhere. It's soap. Use it on your head. Use it on your body. Right? So I try mint. I try coconut. I try the rest. Here's what I'm coming back to. What about clashing scents? I get your aromatherapy clashing with my everybody smell. Is that a problem?
I've never found it to be a problem, and I use different scents as well. Most of the scents that we have gel well with other fragrances you might have in your shower, but that's why it's nice. You can just tilt it up and turn it off, essentially, right now. And the new version that we're coming up with actually has an on-off feature to it, but we're designing it so that like you can use it for, let's say you want the first 5 minutes just to relax and unwind in your shower. Okay, use SEO, and then turn it off when you want to do something else, if you're really worried about the conflicting scents.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Who would have thought I'd be such a dandy about it? First of all, I'd say I use a bar of soap on my head, and then I come.
Well,
back
we're gonna get you. We're gonna get you a starter kit, and you're gonna try it out, and you're gonna be our number one fan.
You know what? I'm already a fan of the freaking business. I love the way you operate. I feel like you know what it is? It's like one of those Russian dolls with you. I like it on the outside, and then I open up and go, "Oh, look at that! Oh, look at that! Oh, look at that! He's using Zapier! Oh, look at that! He's using Shopify in an interesting way! Oh, look at that! There's FOMO popping up."
Yeah,
FOMO is coming up on your side. Thanks, by the way, for the gift. I really appreciate it. I don't want to stop, but I also want you to know it's not just the gift. I really like the way that you think, and I'm.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate that. I try to always, like, one of my rules to myself is always learn, always be learning, and I try to dedicate a significant part of my day to just learn something new and try to apply that to some part of the business, because that's the way you grow.
So FOMO is one of the things, I can see that actually, that you keep experimenting with stuff. FOMO is the thing that pops up on your site and says, someone in Chicago just bought bought a set. Someone in New York just bought, here, it says Elizabeth in East Longwood purchased aromatherapy shower kit. And then it goes away.
Yeah.
It gets this feeling that it's like a busy store. Right. You installed it?
Yeah. So the other elements of the other elements of the landing page, other than like a great H1 and testimonials, is creating a sense. You got, like, with paid traffic, you have to create a sense that, like, everyone's doing this. You're missing out if you don't do it, and you're missing out if you don't do it right now. So that's why we have on the page, we have a countdown timer. You know, you got 15 minutes to take advantage of this. It's 50% off now. You know, better go now or it's going to disappear. You have the social proof of people are buying this right and left. And on the non-crowdfunding version, which you're not looking at now because we're in crowdfunding mode, but on the non-crowdfunding version, there's actually like a bar that's like a red bar that's showing you just how much is like left. And it gets all the way to the end and it's like, oh my gosh, there's only a few of these left. And you know, these things, these persuasion elements are very, very effective. We've tested turning them off, and the conversion rate suffers when you don't have them.
Who does growth at your company or conversion? Who focuses on this? Is that you?
It was me for a long time. I've hired a very talented CRO person from Romania, and she basically handles ongoing kind of coming up with hypothesis generation, coming up with ideas to test, and then we'll look at, like, almost on a maybe biweekly basis, we'll look at all the test ideas, we'll rank them based on the pi score, potential impact effort, and we'll then choose which one we want to focus on.
How do you find someone like that? That's a tough hire.
I built a system for that too.
What's your system?
I built a system essentially to basically in Streak, I'll post like a job essentially, and I'll say which platforms I want it to go post on. So we'll use Upwork, we'll use onlinejobs.ph, we'll use Guru.com. There's a bunch of them. Because I got really tired of like posting these jobs everywhere. So I have a admin team, like a VA team. And so when I post it on there once, then they'll go and post it everywhere. Then the problem is like you'll get all these applicants. And it's a pain in the ass to go into all these different sites, right? So I used Zapier to basically code the responses that were coming in. And then anytime we got a response, then the VA will go in and say, hey, thank you for responding to our ad post. Here's a link to our a survey. Please go fill this out. So essentially, I'm taking all of these different job sites and getting them all essentially onto a Google Sheet by giving them a survey to fill out.
I see. And that's how you standardize all the responses that you get.
Standardize all the responses. And then I can compare, like, I mean, there's some jobs where I've gotten like 200 or 300 applicants. I mean, there's an insane number of applicants just by having, and it's free because, I mean, you can just post again, and we recurrently post these things on these sites. And so that's how I found my developers. That's how I found our CRO. And our developers are unbelievable. It took me a little while to find the best, but I used that same approach.
So what you're doing is you're saying, I need this, and then is it a person who goes to all the different job boards and posts for you?
Yes, that right now is manual.
Okay, and then and you have a system where you just put it into Gmail, and Streak takes it and then sends it out to that place.
Streak is connected to Asana through Zapier and creates a task for one of our admins to go post it everywhere. And then when people apply, then we also get a task from Zapier to Asana essentially to go reply to the.
I see that when the inbound email comes in, it also triggers something in Asana.
Because all these services will send you an email when someone applies to your job.
And Zapier is really good at even at ripping apart an email and pulling out the key elements.
The formatter by Zapier does really well with that. There's another service for that, which I forget now what it's called.
I do too. I love that. That's also created by a Mixergy fan. I was using it and the guy goes, hey, holy shit, it's Andrew.
Yeah, great. I forget what it's called, but it'll come to me in a minute. But anyway, yeah. So,
but here's the thing. I'm wondering why do you even need Streak for that initial trigger? This is a little too in the weeds, but why not just email into Asana and have the task go out? Why do you need it to be in Streak?
You could do it either way. I mean, you could.
To use Streak that way? I'm just curious about how you use it.
Because I like the pipeline element of it, so I can see, okay, we posted this job, now this job is deactivated, or I can take a deactivated job and just put it back into like now it's an active post again. So basically, the trigger is off. Any time a box moves into active, like go post the job. Whereas if you do it just at Gmail, then I have to, would have to write it again and again if I wanted to reapply and repost another job.
I see. So you're kind of using Streak not just as a CRM that manages your sales pipeline, but you're also using it kind of like project management or to see what's
for some things. Yeah. Our, my new bell and whistle though is Airtable. That's the one I really like now.
I know that name. I saw it on like Hacker News. What is Airtable?
It's kind of like Streak. It's not built in Gmail, but it's just like a database. You can just create databases of everything, and you just you create a table here. Let's say maybe it's your HR
like spreadsheet
table.
That's intelligent.
Yeah, exactly, and it's also connected into Zapier too.
You know what? I met the founder of that on the train. I love that's what I love about San Francisco. Like the guy's just like we're looking at him because he has this funky hair.
Yeah.
And then he comes over to say hi, and it turns out he's the founder of Airtable.
Yeah. So Airtable is like a new one that I'm
playing. Yeah, tell me how you're using it, because I thought it was brilliant, but I don't know what to do with it.
Well, we're using Airtable for PR Vault. So, and we use it now for SEO too. Well, one example I'll give you is, let's say the conversion rate optimization stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So we use Airtable for like prioritizing stuff, right? So we'll, let's say we have an idea for a test idea. Let's say maybe it's not a bad test idea, but change the button color, right? I would never probably do that right now, but change the button color, and then you'll give like, so we'll add that into Airtable. We'll give it a pi score. You can do formulas in Airtable as well. So I can take the potential impact and effort score, and then I can add them up into another column. I can add an image, stuff that you can't do in Google Sheets, right? I can add images, I can add comments, and then we'll come together and we'll use that whole sheet. And then you can also create stages, just like you can in Streak. And you can say, okay, this is in the stage of idea, this is in a stage of researching, this is in a stage of in progress. And so you can kind of use it for, you know, managing your...
Damn, I'd love to just look over your shoulder as you use it, because I see the potential in it, I just don't see it
I'll send you a screenshot and you can put it in the show notes.
Okay, all right, I'd love it.
Yeah.
Wow, man, all I want to do is just like geek out on the software that you use to run this company. How many people are working with you?
For SEO, we have about 10 people.
Okay.
Not all of them are full-time. So we mostly are freelancers. Mostly is fully distributed, so I don't have any direct employees. And then for PR Vault, we have about five people right now.
Okay. Pinterest ads haven't worked for you, but email sequences have. You told me before you started that Klaviyo is what you use for email, and I asked you why would you use Klaviyo, and you had a really great response. Why Klaviyo?
Well, at the beginning, Klaviyo was the next best thing after MailChimp that was recommended in all the Shopify forums, and so that's why we originally got on there. And then it has super powerful logic that you can do in terms of where the customer is in their journey. So if they bought a starter kit from our Shopify site, but they haven't bought a refill, we can create a whole flow or autoresponder sequence to try and get people to buy a refill. But then what's really cool, what they launched, I think, you know, towards the end of last year, was that same group of, like, that same logic that defines who should go in that sequence, like has bought starter kit, hasn't bought refill, can then be also loaded into Facebook as a custom audience automatically. Not like I have to download the list of customers and then load it into Facebook, which is what you used to have to do. You can automatically connect those two things. And then I can run, in tandem with my emails that are going out to the customer on Klaviyo, I can run ads on Facebook that dovetail exactly with the messaging they're seeing in Klaviyo. Because at the end of the day, like, you know, maybe 15, 20, 25% of people will open your email. What about the rest of the people? A lot of them are on Facebook, so we can kind of do dual messaging of the same concept that way.
Interesting that it's only 15-25% that you're getting.
I just made that up. I haven't actually looked at it.
Okay, you're saying, but it's some small.
Yeah, I mean, in general, I think like open rates are probably in that, you know, 20-30% range for most companies.
Okay. And then how do you keep track then of the cost per acquisition, considering all the different ways that you're reaching them?
Well, we track the customer acquisition cost per acquisition. We do it multiple ways. One is just in Facebook itself. So we have all the pixels set up so we can see how much we're spending in Facebook, how much the customer buys, so we can get the actual revenue value into Facebook too. And then we'll use like Google Analytics, you know, just very simple. Like you can look in Google Analytics to see how much, you know, sales you got from email, how much sales you got from Facebook. And
I see, but it doesn't tie back to the original source, the original ad.
No, that's why we usually do that in Facebook. There was a tool, what was it called, that did attribution like that for different. But we really, like the majority of our spend right now is in Facebook. So I don't really have a lot of other paid channels active. We're testing around in Pinterest, and I want to get more active in YouTube because I think that that's another really kind of hidden channel that not a lot of people take advantage of, but there's a lot of ad inventory there.
Yeah.
So I want to get involved in that. But until we have like, you know, three or four acquisition channels running, like attribution isn't a huge problem for us.
Makes sense. Yeah. Blogger outreach didn't go so well. Why do you think?
Well, it didn't not go well. I mean, we were able to get bloggers to write about our, you know, our product and our, and kind of write reviews and do video reviews in many cases. The challenges were, it was more like the strategy, right? The strategy was like, okay, let's get bloggers to review. And, you know, we thought maybe we could get traffic from those to our site and, you know, get a bunch of sales from that. What ended up happening is it's very hard to tell which of these bloggers actually has, even with, you know, looking at their Alexa, what we did was look at their Alexa score, we'd look at how many comments they had, but it was still very hit or miss to figure out which bloggers to actually send samples to. And it was, even though we tried to automate it as much as possible, it was pretty laborious to try and do all this like blogger outreach. So at the end of the day, like our goal of getting a lot of traffic from it and the SEO value, maybe we got some SEO value from it, but it never was a huge driver of sales that we thought it would be. Like the strategy was like, let's give them a sample, they'll review it, they'll put a link, we'll give them some special coupon code, and then we'll get traffic from, in aggregate, from a lot of these different blogs to our site. And we never saw a huge
you know what?
From it.
I hate to say it, but blogging is basically dead.
Well, yeah, this is a few years ago, but yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. But I just interviewed, do you know the guys from High Smile? Have you heard of them?
No.
They're doing killer stuff. The same thing that you're doing for PR and blogging, they applied to like influencers on Instagram and YouTube. And I feel like you should talk to them because they get people to just take a picture with High Smile or try it on camera. And you know, like a lot of the people who they like get to take this High Smile, this teeth whitening,
right.
take a picture are basically naked or in their underwear, you know? Which has nothing to do with High Smile, but everything to do with SEO. Like I can imagine that you hearing their system, you'd be able to pick up on the details of how they structure it and be able to apply it here. And they would benefit, I think, from your Facebook ad buys because as good as they are at influencer marketing, and they got one of the Kardashians, I don't know any of them, but they got one of the Kardashians even at this point to work with them. And they even have smaller people who have interesting followings on YouTube to try them. But I don't think they do much on Facebook.
Yeah, that was I'd love to connect with them.
Yeah. Let me reach out to them after this interview. Cool. Spas, did that work for you?
So the challenge with spas, I mentioned this a little bit before, but was very fragmented market. So we had a couple different challenges that we ran into with spas. So one was fragmented, so hard to reach all of them at once in some way. And then we did eventually we were able to get a rep. An independent rep to take our product and try and go and sell it into spas. But this was, we had one in like Florida, we had one in like Arizona, so we had a couple across the country. The challenge for us was these reps usually have, independent reps have multiple lines that they're repping, and they tend to focus on, first of all, what's already selling the most mm-hmm. and what's the kind of highest price point because they're getting a percentage. So like our thing was kind of low priced, and then you know, we finally did get some sales into these spas, and then what happened was people didn't know what it was. Like, it was sitting there on the shelf, and it's like, what is this thing, aromatherapy shark? I'm not really exactly sure how that works. So we didn't have the benefit of, like, a video explaining it. So we did eventually, like, we designed a display unit that went in with the kits, and that actually did quite well and improved things. But we, at that point, we had already decided, like, this isn't the right channel for us because we're never going to see massive growth here, at least at this stage in our company.
Yeah, I get it. There's nothing like online direct marketing. I feel like it's, for me, I love watching it. A lot of my friends, when they go through Facebook, all they see are like info marketer ads. I guess I just am not clicking on those that are not interested, so I don't see them. All I see are these product videos that remind me of the old infomercials that I can't stop watching.
Yep.
And it's kind of fun.
And they all have, like, I love clicking on them now too because you'll see the funnels, the creativity that people have in terms of, like, taking people through the journey of what this product is. And then if you click and you watch one of them, you go to the page and you'll see their whole retargeting sequence. And
how do you see that whole retargeting sequence?
Well,
if
you click on the ad, yeah, exactly. Yes. If you click on the ad and go to the site, usually that'll put you in their
retargeting. And then all you see is their ads for a week.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And there are tools also where you can spy on people's ads too, which is fun.
What are some of those tools?
One is called Which Ads Work, I think, whichadswork.com. And you can basically, filter by different types of verticals and different types of products and see different ads and how many shares and likes and everything they're getting. So, but there are ways
to do it.
Those
don't seem to work with Facebook because, am I right? No, actually, yeah, they're showing examples of Facebook.
Yeah, it's on Facebook. But there's ways to do it on Facebook without even using that software. Like if you click on an ad in the upper right in the dropdown and you say, I think it's like, why am I seeing this? It'll then tell you, it'll bring you to another thing that'll show you why you're seeing this. And you can see the different, you can click on the different vertical buckets and then it'll show you different ads from those buckets. So you can, there's ways to do it.
Oh, I didn't know it would show you different ads from those buckets. I knew it showed me what I did that caused that ad to come up.
Yeah, it will.
Man, dude, this is so good. I feel like we should have done this in two interviews. I'd love for you to come back to do another one. I'd love to do like, as you keep coming up with different software, different techniques for growing your business, just keep it in mind. And I'd love to have you come back and just share the stuff that works.
I would love to. And as I said, I've long been a fan of your show. I think you give the best interview in town. You ask difficult questions, which is important because sometimes people just get softball questions. Doesn't make people really think. So I think that's super important.
Thanks. I hope I didn't get to ask you many tough questions, but I don't try.
Asked me a couple on the spot ones at the beginning about Amazon, which I hadn't thought about in a while, so I had to like kind of think quickly.
You know, but, what is a tough question of is, do you know Shep Gordon from Supermensch, the documentary and book?
Uh-uh.
Oh, guy's so good. If you want a documentary to go fire you up with creativity, you got to check out Supermensch. Mike Myers did it about this guy who promoted Emeril Lagasse. Is just like a chef who was nobody, made him into a celebrity. Alice Cooper, tons of other people. And he never mentioned his co-founder in the documentary. And in the book, he only mentioned him in passing. And so I tried to find the frickin' co-founder and he wouldn't talk to me. And I brought him up in the interview. I wasn't trying to sandbag him, but I did want to understand what happened with this co-founder and where to go. Yeah. And I could tell by looking at his eyes, that's kind of a tough issue. And he explained it. He said why it was a tough issue. And so, yeah, I do like to ask the tough questions, but not to,
I know,
not to trap people to understand them.
Yeah. To understand. And it's not even necessarily tough, but it's like diving deep into things that people might gloss over. And it's like, wait, let's take a step back and like, let's talk about what you did there. Cause that's important. And deep dive into something, which is,
I think,
to help your listeners. Yeah.
All right. Thank you for doing this. Before I close out by giving people your URL, actually I'll ask you to give both your URLs. I'll tell them that the two sponsors that I had for this interview are the company that will help you hire your next great developer or MBA or many others. Who knows what else they're going to have by the time this interview is up. It's called TopTal, TopTal.com/Mixergy. If you want a design like me, and man, did I not want one, but I needed one. If you need a design, I should say, go to designcrowd.com/Mixergy. Really one of the best tools in my arsenal right now. And finally, I've got to say a big thanks to a past Mixergy interviewee and friend of the show and listener and fan, the founder of SwiftType. And I'm really glad that he created SwiftType because we are using it as one of the tools on our site to improve search. Search really sucked. I tried Google Search as a plugin, sucked. SwiftType is the way to go, and I'm really appreciative that they make it, and I'm glad that that they're part of the site. All right, you've got SEO, and the full URL is what?
SEOshower.com, ESSIOshower.com.
And that video is fantastic. I think people need to check that out. And second, this PR thing, PR Vault.
Yes.
Why get into it, and what happens when we sign up?
Yeah, so Why get into it? Because I it's a good opportunity, I think. It's like something that people need. I launched it just kind of to see if people would pay for it and would sign up. And so far we've gotten about 15 customers, clients in our beta, and we've done no advertising at all. It's all been word of mouth. So that tells me maybe we're onto something. So right now we're really focused on just building out the product and the service, and then we'll go a little further. We'll do a little bit of a marketing push, and we'll see how much more we can take, how much more validation we can get for it, one step at a time. But what we do essentially is you as the brand or product or service will come to us. You'll tell us, you'll fill out a type form. You'll tell us about who you are, what your product is, what makes it great, what's the differentiation in the market, what type of press you're looking to get, whether it's online, TV, radio, print, geography, you know, what topics you're looking to get covered, John. We'll take that all that information in. We'll have a consultation with you. We'll learn about your goal, your PR goals. We'll build your media lists. We'll write your pitches. We'll set it all up in a CRM for you. We'll send it all out, and then you're just going to get responses in your inbox from editors. So we think that, I believe that startups and small, medium-sized businesses need to get PR. They want PR, but there's a big barrier to entry. There's two real big barriers to entry. One is the price tag. Mm-hmm. You know, like 10 grand a month is a lot for a small business. That's one. The other is a lot of startups or founders don't know how to do it, and they have other things that they're working on. They need somebody to help them with it. So that's why we're doing it. I think that there's an opportunity to build something really valuable.
How many months does somebody need to be a part of this before they start to see results?
Usually people will see the results in the first month.
Really?
Yeah. Sometimes it takes longer, but I mean, you're going to get some response in the first month just by the design of the way we do it. It's very, we haven't seen one client yet not get any results. But like I said, sometimes it takes editors seeing things a few months to really take action on it, like the GMA thing that I experienced, right? So don't necessarily expect everything up front. You might take some time. And I've seen some where like they sign up, we launch their campaign, and like they've gotten like 50 leads in like the first month. I mean, it's just like unreal, and some really good ones. So
PR Vault, V-O-L-T.
Correct, like turbocharge it.
Yeah. All right, thanks so much for doing this, Peter.
My pleasure. It's been real, and I love Mixergy, so this is all my pleasure.
Thanks. Me too. Thank you for doing this. Thank you all for being a part of Mixergy. And if you're listening to this and you're building something great, when you're ready, come email me. I'd love to have you on. Bye, everyone.